Hey there, it's Michaela LaFrac. Heads up that we've edited this podcast episode a little bit for you. Skimmed the fat, boiled it down. Hope you enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today on the show, geez, I'm crow, do we have a lot of good stories for you. We will hear about an attempt to break a world record of dogs at a film screening in Middlebury. Yes, a film screening. You heard that right. We'll learn about the history of Vermont's favorite exclamation, geez, I'm crow. And a local firefighter will tell us about a summer camp that's training young women to become firefighters. But first, the Olympics. I don't know about you, but the Olympics were a huge deal in my house this year. I, for one, fell in love with the new sport of breaking, and I almost lost my mind watching some of the track and field events and how close they were. My daughter got so obsessed with women's gymnastics that she ended up busting her lip at school the day after the women's all-around finals. Her teachers told me that she was trying to do, and I quote, sparkly leotard gymnastics. But alas, all good things must end, at least for a couple of years. Here to help us say goodbye to the Olympics is Brian Mann. He covered the Summer Games for NPR. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Michaela. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. Where in the world are you joining us from?
I'm in a little town in rural Portugal, taking a few days off and just kind of decompressing after just like so much crazy sport and culture and pastries that I just needed to like sort of decompress a little bit. It was amazing. Paris was amazing. That was really something. Seeing it on TV was great. Seeing it up close was just bonkers cool.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm glad you're taking a couple of days to decompress. Thanks for joining us during that time. We are also joined from a little bit closer to home, the town of Thetford. Peter Graves is there. He's a veteran sports broadcaster who has covered more than a dozen Olympic Games. Last year, he was inducted into the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Hall of Fame for his work covering ski jump, cross-country skiing, and other winter sports. Peter, welcome to the show. Peter, can you hear us? All right, we're going to work on continuing to connect with Peter, but we want to hear from you in the meantime. If you are already missing the Olympics like we are, call in and keep that party going with us. What was your favorite Olympic sport to watch? Call us at 800-639-2211. Peter, can you hear us now?
I can hear you. I hope you can hear me.
We can hear you. Great. Welcome to the show. Peter, let's start with you. What was it like for you watching the Olympics this year? Not being there, but getting to watch on TV. What were some of your favorite sports?
Yeah, well, I've been to 13 Olympic Games.
Wow.
Over the years, and the last one was Tokyo, where I worked on the cycling announcing there. It's hard to sit one out, but I was glued to the television, and NBC did a marvelous job. I think the best ever, and their ratings made an 82% jump over Tokyo. So people were watching. I think one of the key things is to give you a little context about Paris specifically. You know, we have come off some Olympic Games that were well-intentioned, but that were really interrupted by COVID, in particular Beijing Winter Games and Tokyo Summer Games that had to be delayed a year, and we're in 2021. And then even looking back to Rio, there was the Zika virus that everybody was upset about. So it's interesting. We went back to a much more traditional European locale and with familiar and wonderful iconic landmarks and a beloved sense of arts, culture, and history in Paris. And I think everybody was ready for Paris to throw out the welcome mat. And I think they did.
Yeah, I got to say, watching a beach volleyball in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower was a pretty incredible sight. And Brian, you got to be there in person. What was the energy like in Paris compared to other Olympic Games that you've attended?
Yeah, the contrast between Paris and Beijing, as Peter says, you know, Beijing was held with intense COVID lockdowns. It's also an authoritarian regime there that definitely, you know, colored it. There was an opening ceremony where Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin were up on the dais high above the crowd. It just gave a very different energy from suddenly you're in Paris. It's one of the freest, most beautiful cities in the world. And you know, one of the things that the French did, and I think people are really going to be writing and thinking about this, is they really did use the venues and the places that are iconic, and they repurposed them rather than building a whole bunch of stuff that's going to sit empty or have to be kept up for hundreds of millions of dollars down the line. They really tried to use these. You know, I was in the Grand Palais watching fencing one day, and it was just under that vast soaring glass dome. It was one of the most magical things imaginable. And so, yeah, they leveraged that free spirit, the lack of COVID. It was pretty creative. And even the Seine River, you know, there was a lot of anxiety and some bumps in the road with the water quality in the Seine. But it was, even that was such an ambitious, cool idea. The fact that it didn't come off just perfectly, you know, you have to nod at the ambition of that. It was pretty cool.
They spent about
$1.5 billion in an effort to clean up the Seine to acceptable standards. So they made some progress. And I was reading this morning that the concept of urban downtown swimming is becoming increasingly popular as people want to drive these events downtown. So they did make some progress. Couple of athletes hospitalized from the triathlon, but nothing really serious. And I was glad about that.
Mm. Well, I want to turn to some of the folks from our region who are able to participate in these Olympics, including one of the biggest stars overall to emerge out of the Olympics, which is Ilona Marr of Burlington. She won a bronze medal as part of the Rugby Sevens team, and she did an amazing job documenting her Olympics journey on TikTok and Instagram and gained a pretty massive following. I mean, she's really funny, and she also spreads these powerful messages of body positivity and the strength of women. And earlier this week, she went on Late Night with Seth Meyers, where she talked about how she first got into rugby back in high school in Burlington. Let's take a listen.
It's a sport that just really encourages you to be physical and show what your body's capable of. Like, they want you to run as fast as you can. They want you to tackle as hard as you can. I think that just really allowed me to express myself.
It's really cool. And it does seem like, I think, again, like the success of the team, it's going to open that door for a lot of people who maybe never even thought about playing.
I think it's been so fun to see, like, I mean, we had so many people tune into our last games. You don't even know what's happening. You don't know what a ruck is. Nobody knows what a scrum is. But to see people tune in and see, like, wow, this looks like a fun sport, it's really awesome because we want to get people into sports because I know what it's done for me and how it's, like, changed my body confidence, made me feel so good about myself, and I know can do it for so many other girls. So I'm so happy they just got a taste for it, and maybe they'll go to their local club, their local college, and try it out.
That's Ilona Marr of the Rugby Sevens team. She's actually coming back to Vermont, to Burlington tomorrow. And I know many locals here are excited to welcome her back home. Brian, how much of a focus is social media for many of these athletes?
Yeah, this has been one of the big conversations leading up to the games. You know, I was at a lot of the places where the national trials were happening and then at the games. And it's kind of a two-edged sword. Ilona Marr is an example of someone who's really very strongly used social media. She's leveraged it to raise her own profiles, to spread messages that she thinks are really important. And she's been so successful at that, combined with, of course, just being an amazing athlete. And their bronze medal win was historic for the U.S. women. The last-minute conversion was remarkable and crazy to watch. So there was that on the field as well, on the pitch as well. But also, yeah, and of course, you know, it's important to say, Michaela, that some of these athletes talk about social media with real wariness. It can be a real burden for some, but for others, it's really been something they've been able to leverage into financial success, into messaging. This was really, in many ways, I think, going to be seen as the first truly social media Olympics. It was everywhere. People really stepping forward. NBC, of course, really the main broadcaster of this, but there's this huge grassroots explosion of people telling their own stories.
Brian, you mentioned that final quote. Sorry, one second. I just want to just give a load of Mars team one more pat on the back for that amazing conversion at the last minute of their game. I think I've watched it a dozen times, no joke. And every time I get a little verklempt. Peter,
I watched it again one more time just before coming on, just to, you know, refresh my memory. And I found myself doing the same thing. I was like right back watching it the first time again and so excited. And it was just, it was really amazing and really fun to see them. And again, really historic. This is something we've just never seen before. You know, they're in Paris. There are big rugby stadiums. This is a big sport in many parts of the world. It's really a commercial sport, a financial sport, and to have an American team come in and really compete like this, it was pretty awesome.
It really was. Peter, you were about to say something, and I jumped in with my rugby enthusiasm.
I was also going to say, you know, I think it was just great. I think she's terrific in every way, but Ellie St. Pierre, now a two-time Olympian, eighth in the 1500-meter event, won the Olympic trials in Eugene in the 5000, gave birth a year ago, and she's, I think, just getting stronger and stronger. And when you take into account that endurance peaks really come mostly between 28 and 32. She's 29 now. She has another 4 years ahead of her, and I think she goes down as a really legitimate medalist, hopeful. But, you know, it's a great story. You know, living in Montgomery, I think growing up in Richford on a Canadian border, and a dairy farmer with her husband. She represents so many great things, a humbleness about the Olympic movement that I like, that is thing. It's quite typical of Vermont athletes. And Dartmouth also had an athlete who hails from Norwich, Vermont. That's Billy Bender, class of 24. And he and his teammate, who also rode at Dartmouth, Oliver Bubb, won their Olympic trials by 3 seconds. So a lot of these sports, they're getting more competitive and more competitive, but it seems to be that outdoor endurance ethic that New Englanders and Vermonters really embrace. And I wanted to mention Craftsbury and the Green Racing program up there, which is fantastic, put six people, they're not native Vermonters, but six people on the Olympic team, and that's very impressive.
Wow, that's amazing. You brought up Ellie St. Pierre, who placed eighth in the 1500-meter final. Brian Mann, you were at one of her races, correct?
I was at that race. It was very powerful to watch her run, and I followed her in Eugene at the national trials there. You know, this was, it's really important to say, and this is not sort of participation trophy stuff. It's important to say that just getting to the Olympics and being as powerful an athlete as Ellie St. Pierre is an astonishing feat. And, you know, most athletes there do not medal. And, you know, she was in a field where Faith Kipyegon again set a new Olympic record. It was an incredibly strong field. So the U.S. finished seventh and eighth in that race, not what they wanted, certainly, but it was still, you know, great to see them run and just getting there. And the same is true for, you know, Billy Bender. This is, you know, one of the things that's really cool to be at the Olympics, and especially a free Olympics like this one, where people are outside the bubble, you can really be around the athletes. You can see that this is a joyous journey for them, even when they don't come away with bronze or silver or gold. And I think, you know, this is going to be something, you know, wherever her career, Ellie's career goes after this, this was, you know, a remarkable thing for her to get there and to compete.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, it's just, it's not just solely about winning medals or medal count, though the U.S. did win that. I mean, I think making it to the big show, the largest amateur sports show on the planet, that kind of galvanizes the world together for these 2 weeks. And it was really, really fantastic. So it of course is off to LA, where they are going to try to have a relatively speaking, no build policy. They'll be renovating a lot of venues there, and they have some big and mighty plans. They even hope to make a profit on those games, as Peter Uborov did as organizing chair back in 1984. So, I mean, that's really exciting stuff. We did not have three sports represented in Paris, and they were karate, men's baseball, and women's softball. Those will be returning to the Paris Games. And still on the Olympic beat, IOC President Thomas Bach, who was an East German, longtime president of the IOC, he's going to be stepping down after these games. And media has reported that the probably the prohibitive favorite to maybe take that is Seb Coe, who's a president of the International Athletics Federation. So there's a lot moving on and a lot to look at. I mean, these Olympic stories don't get a lot of attention when it's not during that two-week window. But I have always found watching the bidding process, to be enormously compelling.
Well, you mentioned that a couple of sports are leaving, a couple of new ones are returning again. As a former softball player myself, I'm very excited for softball to come back to the Olympics, though a bit heartbroken that breaking is not returning, which is apparently my new passion. Go ahead.
Michaela, softball, they built a big venue for baseball and softball in Athens, the game that I was at doing bicycle racing. And you know, those venues were very expensive to build, and they have just sat there. They're not being used. And people are starting to question, even for the upcoming in 4 years or 2 years, the Cortina Winter Olympic Games. They don't have a very good bobsled location. I mean, Lake Placid has been very public with Orta about saying, hey, have some of those games over in the Adirondacks. And it's interesting thinking. I don't know how it's going to end up, but it's a great story.
Brian, you're an Adirondacks guy. What do you think of that plan?
Well, one of the things that's interesting is that we are heading to Milan in not quite 2 years, February 2026, and this is going to be a split Olympics. The mountain venues are up in Cortina. There are other events going on in Milan. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And, you know, there has been talk of doing some kind of combined thing for Lake Placid and maybe Montreal or some other combination. I think that's still a really long shot given the scale of the games. At this point, they've just gotten so big. But I think this is going to be something that's going to be really interesting to watch. And of course, one of the things, you know, Peter's been talking about, you know, the arc to get to Los Angeles. The thing that's really going to be exciting for the Adirondacks and Vermonters is that now we're starting to really lean into preparing for Milan and the Winter Games, where a lot more of our athletes will be going and competing. That's going to be really fun for me, kind of digging in and working on those stories, telling, you know, the stories of people who are trying to qualify for the winter sports.
And Brian, the Winter Games, as you know, are so much smaller than the Summer Games. And it's sort of easier to get around and navigate. And then if you have just the snow and ice gliding sports, right, like bobsled and luge,
right,
that are planned to be at Cortina, it's easier to navigate than Paris. But where do you get these iconic images of the games, and going by the Louvre and the bicycle race and down the Champs-Élysées and swimming in the Seine? You know, these are simply
I don't know, Peter. I think the skyline of Burlington could certainly compete with any of that. Unfortunately, we have to cut it off here, though. I could keep talking about this all day with the two of you. Peter Greaves of Thetford, a legendary Olympics broadcaster, thank you so much for your time today.
You are so welcome, Michaela, and thanks to Brian as well. I enjoyed it very much.
NPR's Brian Mann joining us from the continent. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, Michaela and Peter, it was fun. Thanks for having me.
Well, coming up, women firefighters are using summer camp to increase interest in that career path among young women. We'll learn more in just a minute on Vermont Edition. Stay with us.